What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 143, and today we're going to be discussing a book titled Civilized to Death. And this is going to be a slight kind of shift for me and Tom. We've had talks about this off the air a lot, but we've had so much conversations about just health and focusing on health from a nutrition standpoint. So obviously getting your protein up, getting your vitamins and minerals up, cutting out anti-nutrients, exercising, supplements to take for longevity. We've had topics and podcasts on all of those topics. And at a point, it comes to a point where there's really not much else to talk about from that perspective. I'm sure we'll find other topics in the future. But for now, we wanted to do a little shift because there's so much more about being healthy than just what you eat. Even though I think that is a very, very big part and probably the first place a lot of people should start. You know, if you want to get your healthy, you want to become stronger, happier, changing your diet is a very easy thing to do. Well, that's not true, but it is the first thing you should do, in my opinion, because it will help you and it won't hurt you at all. But Tom was reading this book and he was like, man, we really should talk about this because it hits on some stuff that we haven't touched on yet. So Tom, do you want to just talk about it?
Yeah, so this book, Civilized to Death by Christopher Ryan. So I read like 2 to 3 books a month. I know you read a lot of books too. And like when I read this book, it was just like an aha moment. I was like, okay, like I've thought a lot of these things, but he put into words like a lot of the thoughts that I have had already. I was like, this book makes so much sense. It's the best book I've read all year, which is saying something because I've read over like 20 books. I think I've read close to 30 books this year. So like, if you're the best book that I've read, like, hey, that's saying something. So yeah, like every podcast I end with the phrase, have a happy and healthy week. And like, that's a motto I try to live by. Every decision I make is to either make me happier or healthier. So something like, hey, you know, I'm going to have like some birthday cake. That's not making me necessarily healthier, but that birthday cake tastes good, so I'm happier in that moment. Or something like, hey, I'm going to wake up at 5:30 in the morning and work out. Generally, when I do that, I'm not the happiest, but I know that decision is making me healthier.
Yeah.
So, like, everything I try to do is, like, buy that. So we've talked about how to be healthier in over 140 episodes at this point. So today I want to just kind of start a little series on how to be happier. And the premise of this book is that humans are different than other animals because we are the only species that lives in a zoo of its own design. And zoos come in many different designs, from like sad, small, cramped spaces with concrete walls filled with like depressed and unhealthy animals just waiting to die, to something like the San Diego Zoo, where they take every step they can to design each exhibit based on the animal's natural environment. And it's no surprise that the animals at the San Diego Zoo are much happier and a lot healthier. So it just kind of shows like your environment really it has an impact on like how happy and healthy you really are. And for this conversation, so civilizations are human zoos and hunter-gatherers are wild humans. So in order to design a better zoo for humans, we need to learn how our species is supposed to live. So all the podcasts that we've done to this point have mostly just been around how humans are supposed to eat. And that's why we do an ancestral-based diet, a lot of meat, a lot of organs, you know, nose-to-tail type of eating with fruits, because that's what hunter-gatherers eat. They don't eat kale, because kale isn't like a wild food. Like, there's no wild broccoli like that you can just pick off the ground. Like, they don't eat those things. That's why we don't either. So, like, yeah, if you learn how hunter-gatherers are supposed to eat, you know how to design a human diet. But this one, we're going to talk about what's the environment that humans are supposed to live in.
I love it. By the, just to cut you off real fast, I love how we're able to connect those two things. Because when you break it down like that, it's so simple and it's so obvious, but we just don't think about it when we're in this kind of rat race of going to work, paying your mortgage, taking your kids to soccer. We just lose track of it. But really, it's so simple if you just take a step back and realize, how did humans do this for millions of years?
Yeah, no, totally agree. And honestly, like, some of the best ideas are incredibly simple. Like the wheel, one of the best inventions ever, is just a circle. Like, it doesn't seem like it's that complicated. Nobody's ever been able to improve the wheel because it was, like, perfect from the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's super simple design. Like, honestly, most of the best ideas are that simple.
Yeah.
All right. So for the sake of this conversation, like, wild humans are pre-agricultural humans. And they typically live in bands from 40 to 150 people. That's a far cry from, like, the millions of people that live in New York City.
Yeah, for sure.
And the, these bands have three common characteristics. So mobility. They migrated with their food. You know, if the herd of buffalo is moving, they're going to move along with that buffalo. Or they're just not going to eat. They're going to lose their food supply. So they could, and they could also easily change bands or create bands if there was, like, some kind of conflict from within. Like, Tyson, me and you aren't getting along anymore. Like, instead of that, like, raising to the point of violence, like, I could just simply move to either another tribe or just create my own. Like, it wasn't that complicated. There's plenty of land to go around. Since they were so mobile, they had very little possessions because they had to carry them. Like, there was no point in every single family to have, like, a pot to cook in if you were just, like, constantly moving around. You would just have a few communal pots, like, to cook food in instead of everybody having them.
Yeah, just think, like, now if you get into a fight with, like, your neighbor. Let's say you own your house and you and your neighbor hate each other. You can't just pack up and leave. Like, the process of moving is so difficult.
Yeah, so, like, that, like, the odds of that raising to violence are so much higher than somewhere else.
Yep.
Yeah, like, based on how humans are supposed to live. And yet, yeah, just because of this, like, nobody had stuff worth really fighting for. So there was very little conflicts. And since you could just leave, like, yeah, there weren't really that many, like, violent altercations. Contrary to what, like, a lot of people talk about, how, like, pre-agricultural humans were, like, tons of warfare. Warfare didn't really start until people started having possessions worth fighting for and, like, permanent land. Because, like, that land was their lifeline. But if you were constantly moving around, you didn't have that one lifeline. You could just follow the food. So, yeah, like, war didn't really start until after agriculture. So the next thing that they have in common is gratitude and natural surroundings. People respected the resources around them and did not take any more than they needed. They didn't have freezers back then, so there was no point in killing, like, a whole herd of buffalo because they would just spoil. You can only, they're only going to kill what they can eat. There's anything after that was not only wasteful, but that's going to impact their future. So, like, they were smart enough to know, like, hey, one buffalo will feed us for a while. Let's just only kill one, even if they had the opportunity to kill a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And if they did kill more than they needed, they would invite other, like, neighboring bands to come and enjoy the food. Because, like, you know, something like a mammoth, gigantic animal, that can feed a lot of people for a long time. And the third thing that they have in common is egalitarianism. So this does not mean that everybody was treated equally. They were not. Like, you know, for the longest time, men and women have always been treated differently. Like, the best hunters still got preferential treatment. They would still get, you know, like, the better cuts of meat and stuff like that. But what it does mean is that everybody had access to the same weapons, had the same amount of free time to develop those hunting skills. So the people that were treated better were because, like, they deserved it. Like, not just because their father was a great hunter, so they get special treatment, like, you know, down the line, kind of like royalty. Like, no, that didn't exist. If you wanted to get special treatment, you needed to earn it.
Honestly, I think we all have experienced the opposite of this in our workspace. I think a lot of people know some girl that's, like, the granddaughter of the boss, and the girl sucks. She never shows up on time. And she's just not a good coworker, but she's going to be there because her uncle or grandpa runs the show. And we all know how much, like, resentment that builds. And it just sucks working with those type of people. And so having a system where that isn't a thing just seems like it just makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, the closest thing that we have to like an egalitarian like system, I guess, would be sports. But there's still people that get blackballed for political reasons, or they're just, you know, like Colin Kaepernick. Mm-hmm. Hey, he's not the best like 10 quarterbacks in the league, but he's definitely like a top 100 quarterback in our country or like in the world. So like he should have a job when most football teams have like 2 to 3 quarterbacks. Like he's definitely top 50. Yeah. Like, you know, so like he should have a job, but for other reasons he doesn't. So it's not like, even in the world of sports where it's the closest thing, egalitarianism doesn't work there either. Mm-hmm. So this is an interesting metaphor that was like eye-popping to me. I had no idea this was the case, but it makes a lot of sense.
And it shows the power of the environment. Yeah, it shows the importance of how our environment affects us, because I think that's lost on a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, yeah, you didn't know this either. Like, I was shocked when I read this. So grasshoppers and locusts are the same insect. They have the same DNA and can change back and forth. So you can go from a grasshopper to a locust and back to a grasshopper in one lifespan. I don't know if there's any other animals that can do that. Like, yeah, you could go from a caterpillar to a butterfly, but you can't go back to a caterpillar. So, yeah, there are some changes, but this is, like, the only insect animal that I know of that can change back and forth. And they change based off of their environment. So grasshoppers, they're solitary. They have long legs. They're slow moving. They're pretty mellow as far as, like, insect standards. Locusts, on the other hand, have short legs, form giant swarms, and are constantly scurrying around. They can become like a biblical level plague, like type of disaster. So grasshoppers, cool. You have grasshoppers in your yard, no big deal. You have locusts in your yard, you need to move, or like you just have a giant issue on your hand. So two completely different insects. So what determines if the insect is a locust or a grasshopper? All has to do with the environment. When food is plentiful, the insects spread out and become grasshoppers. Peaceful, slow moving, just living a good life, eating their fill. But when food is scarce and the insects are forced into close quarters, they become locusts. And that's when they form these giant swarms and go from field to field and just start eating and destroying land left and right. But once like they find like a field and can spread out again, they're no longer like in very close quarters, then they can transform like back into grasshoppers. That's pretty crazy, right?
Oh, I think that is such a trip. I did not know that at all. I just thought they were just different insects, you know, because they act so different. But it makes sense. And I think, I don't know, it's a real good metaphor for how humans are, you know?
Yeah, so keep this metaphor in mind because I'm going to refer back to it a few times throughout this podcast.
Yeah.
So I wanted to kind of take a look at a few examples of what we're doing wrong in our the design of our zoo. So, for like one thing, people living in cities are far more likely to suffer from mental diseases and face higher crime rates than people in rural communities. So right there, like grasshopper versus locust. Once your people are forced to live in cramped quarters, they get mental diseases like depression, anxiety, that type of thing, and then they start committing crimes. And that's mostly just because we weren't designed to live 100 million people, or like a million people, 10 million people, and a few square miles. We're supposed to live in bands of 40 to like 150 people. So yeah, we're cramping way too many people in one space than we're supposed to.
Well, it's just crazy how we can live in a city. I mean, how many million people live in LA? Do you know?
I don't know. I think New York has like 10 million.
Okay, so let's say New York's around 10 million people. So you can live in a city with 10 million people and yet still feel alone. Or you can live in a tribe of 150 people and have a personal relationship with all of them and feel internally like you live with a million people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy, like, just the difference. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's just that grasshopper versus locust. So here's another thing that, honestly, if you try to describe this process to a hunter-gatherer, it cannot make sense to them. Like, it's the most baffling thing in the world to them. And that is something that most people do, or at least they try to, and that's buying a house. So a hunter-gatherer would just get a bunch of friends together, and they would build a home. And they would, you know, after they were building that one, they would build, like, the next person's home. Like, you know, they would just all gather and just do that. Well, we can't do that. You know, it would take a couple days for a hunter-gatherer to build a home. For us, we can't just get a bunch of friends and go build a house. So instead, what we do is we go to a bank and we take out a 30-year mortgage. And that's if we're, like, fortunate enough to be able to afford it, because a lot of people can't even, like, do that. So this isn't even an option for everybody. So what that means is we will spend more time at work instead of with the ones that we love for 30-plus years till we can pay off that mortgage and then be able to retire. And by the time that house is paid off and we have the free time, the family that we worked so hard to provide for has moved out of that house and is most likely trying to start that cycle on their own. Like, how is this a recipe for happiness?
No, God, it's not. Not at all. It just sounds depressing, but it's sad because what else are you supposed to do?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much your only option. I mean, unless you want to, I don't know, live in a van and travel from city to city picking up jobs here and there so you can pay for enough food. I mean, that doesn't seem like a good option either.
Yeah, I mean, people do that, though. People who try and, I mean, I guess it's just sad because the people who do try and break out of this cycle, they're looked upon as being, like, crazy.
Yeah, I mean, because, like, when normal or the common behavior is abnormal, if you try to act normally, you're going to appear abnormal.
Yeah.
You know, like, it just doesn't work. So, yeah, like, trying to describe that process to, a hunter-gatherer, like, what do you mean you're not going to hang out with your loved ones? So you're going to go to work. You're going to go to someplace that you don't want to be at with people that you don't like for how long today? Oh, and you're going to do that 5 days a week for 30 years? Like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes no sense.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, I don't have a solution. Me and Tyson just kind of brainstormed, and there's no good options. Honestly, once this housing market kind of stabilizes, I'm going to be looking into this fool's errand, too. So it's not like I'm saying don't do this. I'm just pointing out, like, a pretty big hole in the system. But I do think that there are some lessons that many people ignore. So honestly, find a job that you like, because you're going to be doing it for a very, very long time. Put clear boundaries in between your work and family life. You don't want to bring that work stress home with you, because then that's just going to stress out your friends and your family, and they don't need that. So, yeah, just, you know, have those boundaries. And always prioritize your family more. Go to your kids' sports games, like their music recitals, all that, instead of trying to work overtime to pay for everything. Like, definitely prioritize your family and spend as much time with your loved ones as you can. And your time is the most valuable thing that you can give to your loved ones. That's way more important than money. Like, we'll talk about that a lot more in this podcast as well. But definitely prioritize your friends and family over work.
Yeah, I think that's a real big shift that a lot of people experience, where they realize no matter what company you work for, you are just like a wheel in a cog and you are replaceable. And the big company knows that. So I would not stick my neck out for my job any more than I'm actually supposed to. You know, obviously you show up on time, do what you're supposed to do, but killing yourself for these big companies, you're not going to get repaid for it. You're not going to be, you know, most of the time at least. So obviously your family is going to matter more than that little extra you're going to get on your paycheck.
And it's like, what are you going to look back on when you're, you know, when you're old at 80? Are you going to remember those overtime hours that you put in? Or are you going to have, like, fond memories of watching your kid play soccer? I mean, obviously, like, going to your kid's soccer game is going to be way more valuable to you later in life. So we should prioritize those things today.
For sure.
Yeah. And so this kind of just leads into this. Having a community is the best predictor of happiness. That's why sports, diets, movies, like, etc., they become so popular, because they create a community around it. Something like Harry Potter is one of the biggest movie franchises because there's a big community around it. You go to a sports game, you can be talking, like, hey, if you're a Raider fan and there's another Raider fan next to you, you guys could be, have differing political views, basically be against each other on everything, but since you have that in common, you guys can be best friends for that day. So just having a community is the best predictor of happiness, and that's why they're popular.
Yeah.
So, I want to talk about something called RAS, Rich A-hole Syndrome. And in order to kind of discuss this, I'm going to talk about three studies that all came out of UC Berkeley. So the first one is they pick two people to play Monopoly. One player starts out with double the money, gets double the money for pass and go, and gets to roll two dice instead of one. So this guarantees that the player with two dice will pass go more often, just accumulating more money, and will also be able to buy more property. So basically, one player is guaranteed to win. And they only play the game for about 15 minutes. So like that, you're guaranteed to win. So after the game is over, the person with all the advantages clearly wins. And when they're asked like why they won, they talk about how they had a better strategy. Like the other player just didn't know what they were doing. Just basically like, hey, I won because of me, not because they had all their advantages. So this just goes to show that people believe their success is based on their own work ethic and has nothing to do with any luck or privilege. So the second study that I want to discuss found that people of higher socioeconomic status are less generous than people of lower status. They donate a smaller percentage of their income despite having more money to spend and would also qualify for tax credits that poor people wouldn't either. And the third study is that people who drive nicer cars, so that's kind of a reflection on their socioeconomic status, they're less likely to stop for pedestrians and are more likely to ignore the rules and etiquette of the road. So, you know, like if you pull up to like a four-way stop sign, the people in nicer cars are more likely to like go in front of you and like cut somebody instead of just like, you know, letting everybody go in their like proper turn.
Yeah, asshole. So, they're called assholes.
Yeah, I was just trying to like,
yeah,
try to cut back on the cussing.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So these three studies show that as people's socioeconomic status increases, their compassion for others decrease. And it's not the money that's turning these people into a-holes. It's what people do with money. Being rich allows you to buy a big house away from people. So this isolation away from other people leads to a lack of empathy and also increases your feeling of entitlement. Remember that Monopoly game? You're better because of you. It has nothing to do with any luck or privilege. And that distance, that's what really leads to that RAS, that Rich A-hole Syndrome.
Yeah. So, you know, that's actually real funny. Before we go on to the next point, so I recently got a house, and one of the things I really liked about it was that it was kind of isolated because the entire front of my house is, there's no houses in front of it. It's basically just like a big, I guess like trail, you can call it. And it makes me feel like I'm farther away from people, you know?
Yeah. But you still work with people, like...
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You're not living on, like, 50 acres by yourself with a gate and a security guard that the only way that anybody can get to your house is, like, through steps.
Yeah.
You know? Like, because you want them there.
That's true.
Yeah. So, I mean, the best personification of RAS is Jeff Bezos. He's the richest man in the world, worth over $200 billion. So if I gave you $250,000 a day since year one, 1 year like AD, he would still be richer than you. So if I gave you $250,000 a day for 2,000 years.
Yeah, we're not talking about you being born year one. We're talking about the first year period.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's insane. If you made $250,000 a year, I'm saying, hey, you're doing pretty good in life.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
Like, maybe you're not balling, but hey, like, you're living a comfortable life. And no, like, you make that a day and you're still not worth as much as he is.
Yeah, that puts into scale how rich he really is.
Yeah. So even with all that money, he does not pay taxes and even qualifies for child tax credits. So, like, he's definitely not giving back with all of his billions of dollars, his hundreds of billions of dollars. He's not giving back. He's not paying his fair share. And this is because in our society, we tax income and not wealth. All of his wealth is tied up in assets like Amazon stock. So if he were to sell that stock, then he'd be taxed on it. But as long as that money isn't actually cash and it's in, like, assets, he doesn't have to worry about taxes on it. So, like, how does he survive? He gives himself an annual salary of about $80,000 a year, which is not that much money, to be honest, especially like for the lifestyle that he lives. And since he is the richest man in the world, he has no problem borrowing money from any bank. Because, like, what bank doesn't want to give him money? So anytime he needs cash, if he wants to buy a new house, something like that, he just goes to the bank, asks for $100 million, and of course they give it to him. And then, like, in order to pay off that loan, he gets another, goes to another bank and asks them for money and just keeps going around and around. So that's how he's able to afford this, like, rich, lavish lifestyle while only making $80K a year. So he even went to space. While his employees might be the worst treated workers in America, they are far underpaid, they're monitored frequently, like they're forced to pee in water bottles because they can't like even have enough time to take bathroom breaks. They're not allowed to unionize, and they have very little job security. So at Amazon, it's either the best place to work for or the worst company to work for. It doesn't seem like there's any in between.
Yeah, I mean, this is just the scenario. We talked about it in the article of the week with the Berkeley stuff and the going vegan, that type of thing. But the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. The game is rigged. And these rich people, and Jeff Bezos is the prime example because he is the richest. They know ways, and the systems are set up where he'll never have to pay taxes. And there are so many people working 9 to 5 who are eventually going to end up paying more taxes than this guy, which is honestly, it should never be the case.
No, definitely not. Like, he could easily make the world a better place if he chose to, but he doesn't want to. He could give away 90% of his wealth, and his lifestyle would not change at all. He would still eat at the same restaurants, live in the same mansions, go on the same vacations. Think about that. If I lost 90% of my money, like, my life would just suck. Like, that would be a big deal. But yeah, he could lose 90% and still be in the same place.
Yeah, he'd still be a multi-billionaire. Yeah, exactly.
So according to the survival of the fittest model, this is natural. Selfish people would have been more likely to survive in harsh times just because they would have been looking out for themselves. So, hey, if food is scarce, I'm going to be super selfish and eat food for my own. Like, hey, if I have a successful hunt, I'm going to eat while other people around me are going to starve. And that's how my genes are able to get passed on while others were not. But does this make any sense? Do you think a Jeff Bezos would be able to survive in like a typical hunter-gatherer band? Like, no way. So the first, if he tried to do some stuff like this, if he tried to accumulate more food than the people around him, the first thing that they would do is they would all make fun of him and try to shame him into being a better person. So if the shame didn't work, then they could either banish him or, well, like, hey, there's a lot of trained hunters with a lot of like sharp objects. There could be a hunting accident.
Easily. So
these rich a-holes would not be able to survive. Selfish genes would not have been able to pass on because we wouldn't let them. If you weren't being a team player, you wouldn't pass on.
Yeah, it's just in today's world, not being a team player can be advantageous if you're in the right scenario. But if we're actually living how we're supposed to, like hunter-gatherers and small communities, that person would stand out like a sore thumb and everyone would see how shitty they are. But now people don't realize how shitty Jeff Bezos is because he's hiding behind all these tax breaks. He's hiding behind only giving himself $80,000 salary, and he's able to kind of get by without looking like the huge asshole that he is.
Yeah. I mean, like, most foragers would look at our structure and wonder, like, why don't the Amazon workers just get together and go burn down all of his houses? I mean, like, something similar happened during the French Revolution where they, you know, invented the guillotine and, like, just started chopping people's heads off.
They started using it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's one time when the poor did decide to get violent against the rich. But I don't think that's the best solution. I don't think we should go back to those days. But there is a better solution than what we're doing now. Mm-hmm. We should be taxing him a lot more and based off of his wealth instead of his income. Find out whatever tax loopholes these rich a-holes are using and start closing them. And then when they find a new one, close that one, you know. And I think the biggest thing that we need to do is put a limit on what a CEO can make compared to the rest of their employees. So, like, yeah, if you want to have the highest salary in the world, well, then you should be paying your workers a lot more. Because if you have all this money, if Amazon's making all this money, well, their delivery drivers shouldn't be the lowest paid delivery drivers. You know, if it's a successful company, spread that around to the little man and not just the big man.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, if you want to make more money, like, you shouldn't be able to do that and steal from the poor. Like, if Jeff Bezos wants a higher salary, he shouldn't do that by, you know, cutting the salary of all his, like, warehouse workers and stuff like that. Like, no, like, you should be forced to treat your employees better instead of taking all the credit and all the money for yourself.
Yeah, and I don't, like, I'm not trying to sound like I'm anti-capitalism or I hate rich people or, you know, extremely rich people, because that's not the case. Like, I think if you're out there and you are innovating and you are, I don't know, the cream of the crop, you know, you are the biggest, strongest, smartest, fastest, whatever, go ahead and make your money, do your thing. But at what point is enough enough? Like, I think $200 billion is a little ridiculous. And I think, like Tom said, if you do want to go down that road, if you do want to be the richest person that has ever lived, fine, do your thing. You are, you know, 0.001%. You are the top of the top. But we should tax your ass like you are the top of the top.
Yeah, because you can afford it.
Yeah.
Like, he can afford to pay his taxes way more than we can.
For sure.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, there's a lot of things that we can do. But, you know, there are some things that money can't buy. So I talked about earlier, community, that's something. Like, that's very important. Empathy is also at the top of that list. Nobody wants to hear Jeff Bezos' problems. He could have cancer. He could wake up in the most excruciating pain every single day. Like, it hurts for him to walk. It hurts for him to pee. It hurts for him to eat. Nobody would care, because everybody would just be like, yeah, but you're rich.
Mm-hmm.
Like, professional athletes complain about this stuff all the time. Like, a lot of them say that they have mental health issues, they'll have panic attacks and stuff like that. And what do most people do? Yeah, you're rich. Hey, he choked. You know, something like that. We just, like, blame them when it's like, hey, they do have issues too. And, like, this lack of empathy, that all that distance that money bought, it leads to feelings of isolation. It leads to feelings of loneliness. Like, if you watched the Michael Jordan Last Dance documentary from last year, did you ever get the feeling that he was happy? I didn't. He was so rich and popular that he couldn't go outside anywhere because he would just get mobbed full of people. Like, everybody wants to come up with him. Everybody wants to take a picture with him. So he was just stuck living in his hotel rooms because that was the only place that he had any peace and quiet.
Yeah, everyone wanted to be like Mike.
Yeah, like, I don't think Mike wanted to be like Mike.
No, honestly, his obsession, which was winning at any cost, led him down that road. And I don't think he would do anything different, but he didn't look happy to me.
Yeah, like, that's never a feeling that I got from, like, Michael Jordan. He never gave off that type of vibe.
Yeah.
So earlier I mentioned that community is the best predictor of happiness. So how strong do you think the communities around these rich assholes are? Damn it, I said it. I was trying to stick to
the whole time.
So do you think they have close friends and family around them that they get to spend a lot of time with, like our hunter-gatherer ancestors did? I don't think that's very likely, because whatever sacrifices you had to make in order to make that $200 billion or however much money that they made, like, you probably had to cut ties. You probably sacrificed a lot of soccer games. You probably, like, burned a lot of bridges with a lot of friends and family. And whatever people are remaining around you are probably just yes men. They're probably just around you for your money and are just will agree with whatever you say just so they can stick around, just so they can get some of that. They're like remora fish, like around a shark, just getting the scraps.
Mm-hmm.
So rich people still suffer from depression and they commit suicide just like poor people. I mean, we see that in the news, like with like Robin Williams, Anthony Bourdain, and, you know, a couple other celebrities that have committed suicide. And from the outside, it's like, what are they depressed for? Like, hey, everything looks great, but they still suffer from depression. They still have the same issues that we do. So money can't really buy you anything. And I'm not really saying this for you to feel sorry for rich a-holes like Jeff Bezos. Like, F that guy. Like, I mean, he could make the world a better place easily. He's just not. But I am trying to put some things in perspective. Like, if you really want to design a better zoo around you, then take notes from our hunter-gatherer ancestors. Like, the very first thing, like, I'm going to mention this again because I think it is that important, is build a strong community around you. Have gatherings as often as you can. Barbecues, birthday parties, family dinners, even celebrate, like, made-up holidays like Valentine's Day. Hey, we're alive today, so that's a good enough reason to celebrate with our loved ones. Whatever holiday that pops up, you might, like, not have strong feelings about it. Celebrate it anyway, just because it's another reason to celebrate. Any reason to celebrate is a good one.
I love that. I need to do better with that, honestly. Like, I don't know why I have a hard time with that. And like I said in the intro, I've dialed down my nutrition game fairly well. I work out often because it's what I really like to do. But this aspect of health is something I'm really lacking in.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people like have like mixed feelings about Valentine's Day. Some people super love it. Some people like hate it. You know, it's a made up holiday just so we can buy flowers and stuff like that. We can celebrate love any day. Well, it's like, yeah, that's true. You can celebrate your love any day. But here is a reason to celebrate your love that day. So why aren't you going to take advantage of it?
Mm-hmm. I like that. I definitely like that train of thought. And I understand the other one as well, that it's just, you know, some corporate sponsored holiday. But we need more reasons to gather than just take the ones that are given to us.
Yeah. Our ancestors would have had large feasts after every successful hunt. They would have been partying, eating as much as they could, like, what, once a week, once a month, every time they killed an animal, they would be having a party. So, like, you know, live like our ancestors in that standpoint. Like, mm-hmm. you know, barbecues, birthday parties, stuff like that. I mean, there's, if you have a strong community around you, there's going to be a birthday party, like, every week or so. So, like, you should be going to as many of those as you can.
Yeah.
Another big thing is give back to others around you. Helping others, like, leads to your own happiness, too. So you could even consider this, like, a selfish act. Like, give your time, and if you don't have a lot of free time, then give your money to those that need it. Because a successful hunter shares his food with others so that when someone else is successful and he is not, he and his family still get fed. Man, I am having the hardest time saying successful. Finally, I was successful saying successful.
There you go. Yeah.
All right. This is a quote from the book, and I love this quote. The best place to store food is in my friend's stomach.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, because like, hey, you can only store so much, so why not give it to your friend, because he'll give it back to you in turn.
Mm-hmm.
So, great quote. Some of the other things that we've discussed many times in this podcast, you know, throughout the 140-plus episodes that we've done. Eat an animal-based diet, spend more time in the sun and nature, and move often.
If you can do all those things, and which I'm pretty good at those last three, but if you can do those things and also add on top building a strong community and then do everything that that takes on top of it, I think, man, you're setting yourself up for success and you're setting yourself up to actually be happy. I'm not saying you'll live in a mansion. I'm not saying you'll drive a fancy car, but you'll wake up every day with a smile on your face. And I think that's what we all really want at the end of the day.
Yeah, like I end every podcast by saying have a happy and healthy week, because I mean it, because like those are the two most important things in my life. And I think that should be like the two most important things in everybody's life.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think this is a real good shift for us to go down this road a little bit. And Tom's recommended this book to me so many damn times that I'm going to have to read it. I haven't been too good at reading books lately, obviously, as you can tell with my grammar. But I need to get back on that. And this one does seem to be really cool and bring up a lot of points that I haven't thought about and present ideas in certain ways that I've never even considered. So I think that's really cool. And I need to read this book. And I just don't know, like Tom said earlier, eventually he's going to have to go down this rabbit hole of getting a house and paying this huge mortgage. And the answers to this are hard. And if you really want to do live off the grid, you are going to be looked at as a crazy person. But if that makes you happy, I think you should do that. I don't know if that would make me happy personally, because I don't want to live in a van. But if that's you, just do you. And I think, this is a whole other aspect of health that we need to consider.
Yeah, like if you kind of think about it, like people that do decide to form their own community, like out, you know, kind of like away from civilization, our society calls them cults. So like our society is so anti trying to live like our ancestors. Like, maybe some of those cults, there are definitely some, like, negative ones, because, like, they do, like, death packs and stuff like that and kind of brainwash people. And those also have, like, their own issues when it comes to, like, socioeconomic status, where some people are extremely poor while other people are getting rich. But not all of them are like that. Some of them are, like, extremely communal, and it's not always a bad thing. But just any challenge to civilization is, like, a very big threat. So our society does whatever it can to, you know, discourage that type of behavior.
Yeah, because like I said, they just want to keep this system going. A lot of people are making a lot of money and they want to keep it this way.
Yep, the people that think the system works, they work for the system. And like, yeah, maybe it works for them, but it doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah. And that's obvious. Like I say, like from the nutrition standpoint, you look around, everyone's fat, sick, and weak. But how many people, if you look around, are actually really happy? You know, our system's broken in a lot of different ways. So I think that needs to be addressed. And this book hopefully, you know, gives people a lot of ideas. And this podcast sheds light on some perspectives that maybe you haven't thought about. And we'll put a link to the book on the website. So you can go to tntwellnessandnutrition.com and find it there if you like. But Tom, you have anything else to say to it, or you feel like that was enough?
On this topic, I think it's enough. Next week, we'll talk about a little bit more of an adult theme that this book centers around. But yeah, I think that's good for today.
Okay. Yeah, me too. So again, you can find everything on the website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.